What a fang banger.
Hello, and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends, rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Lozzie.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Elise.
This week we're discussing Season 1, Episode 12, You'll Be the Death of Me. This episode originally aired November 23rd, 2008. It was written by Rael Tucker and directed by Alan Ball.
And our summary from the wiki is, Suke finds a link to the string of killings in Bon Ton and is soon in the murderer's crosshairs again. Tara decides to make the most of her second chance with Marianne. Jason finds a new calling after anti-vampire zealot Ori visits him in jail. Bill tempts fate during his latest attempt to save Suke. Sam is perturbed by a surprise encounter with an old acquaintance. Which is a random sentence. Lafayette finds himself in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, it's finale time, guys. How are we all feeling?
I'm feeling like I miss seasons of television that were 12 episodes long and were guaranteed to have like 5 seasons. That's what I miss.
Yeah.
Because watching this episode is so fun.
It was so much fun, and I also, like, Melissa and I talked about this prior, but, like, it was really hard to not go right into the next episode afterwards.
So, when you're buying wedding crockery, you have to choose how many pieces you have. And there, I think this comes up in, I don't know, some sitcom or something, which is, like, 8 is too few,
it comes
16
up
is too many.
In Sleepless in Seattle.
So... Sleepless in Seattle, is it? Right. Okay, yeah. So this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm watching a lot of TV at the moment where there's only 8 episodes mm-hmm. in the season, and I'm feeling antsy about it. I'm feeling like you get to 4 episodes and you're like, wait, we're almost halfway done. What's going on? So, yeah, I agree. A very, very well-written, compact 12 episodes.
I think that also, I mean to say, like, I sort of feel like I miss watching... like confident TV, and they were confident enough to do 12 episodes, and they also weren't worried about being canceled. And so I think that in a confident TV show, 8 episodes is great. If they have more story, hopefully, you know, I'm saying hopefully because everything gets canceled, but like the show was made when things weren't getting canceled. So it's like, I mostly just want to say that I've been on record multiple times saying I think 8 is a great number of TV episodes, but I'm also watching the Star Wars show. So I get what you're saying.
Well, I also Foundation, also Wheel of Time, like they're all 8 episodes, and I'm like, but equally I was also bitching about Daredevil having and Jessica Jones having 13 episodes and them having 3 episodes of filler. And
right, I was on the same note. I felt like 8 episodes was I was gonna say this before I even brought that up, 8 episodes was great for the Defenders. Like, that didn't need more than that.
Yep.
And yeah. I'm someone who enjoyed that series. I know a lot of people didn't, but...
And, like, we're just kind of nitpicking, I think. But I think that the baseline is that, like, I think that the TV we are currently watching never feels like this, which is, like, we just wrapped up 12 episodes. Every single one of them was interesting, and we have a little time on the end to give you a little tease and just, like, get, honestly, pretty deep into the next season, because it's, like, there was no chance this wasn't coming back. And if there was, then I'm just rewriting history, and I think that's great.
I mean, yeah, they were seeding season 2 plot stuff like 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
So I guess the question then becomes, can you think of a more confident first season of television?
I mean, I almost want to say
really
Dexter,
struggled.
But that was, they weren't doing what True Blood was doing. They weren't hinting at anything in the future. That could have wrapped after one season end. We would have all been.
Yeah, I kind of feel like... My main shows are like The Sopranos and Mad Men. I don't remember them like really seeding anything for future seasons. They definitely were very confident, but I don't think that they like, and they had room to breathe. Like, it wasn't like jam packed and it didn't feel slow to me, but they didn't like, unlike this, I don't think they like went into next season stuff really.
Yeah. The West Wing, first season is excellent, but yeah, again, it's kind of just telling a story as it goes along. It's not trying to like construct elaborate storylines and into way weave things. I think Alias starts doing a bit of that, I think Alias season one is actually pretty solid. And obviously the end of Alias season two really is very confident in the way it finishes. But yeah, this is, for a 12 episode season, first season, I think, pretty flawless first season, guys.
I will say, and I to agree with what Melissa said, I really enjoy that this season finale, and I don't remember if this happens in later seasons, but they wrap it up kind of the story from season one, like two-thirds of the way through the episode, and then start living with what happened, which is not something we always get. Like, you know, we had a little 2 weeks later bit at the end. And I really like that because it feels like more closure. I mean, I know we end on a cliffhanger like we always do, but it feels like we got more closure on the story than sometimes we do in other shows.
Because it's a second season cliffhanger, you know?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, obviously it's not. It's in the first season, but you know.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not to do with the like, if you can say there's one core plot, which is the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cliffhanger that has nothing to do with that, or you assume has nothing to do with that. I think I was also to focus more on this episode rather than the whole season. I did think that it was a little bit slower paced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it gave you a little bit more time with this. There were very little vampire stuff, actually. I think you know, there's a couple of bits and one crispy fried friend, but other than that, yeah.
I just want to pull some things from the episode real quick that, like, maybe we won't have time to chat about, but one, I'm very happy to be done with Renee's horrible accent. I hated it the whole time, especially knowing from the beginning that it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlene's kids watching that sex tape was insane. I said to Tessa when we watched it, I'm like, I hope the kids didn't actually watch that. And she's like, Elise, of course they didn't watch that. It's like, in my mind, these kids like really were having to watch this sex tape. Oh god.
I mean, the daughter is doing a very good, I am horrified by
I wonder what
I'm
they
seeing.
Told them. I wonder what they told the kids. Like, pretend you're watching like this or something.
Honestly, like, I love Arlene to death, and I sort of hope she got someone else to maybe have this talk with her and her children, because she is not in a great place.
No, they need a group therapy session, probably.
Yeah.
For everything that happens in the episode.
Just so you know, you don't have to be like Jason Stackhouse. This doesn't have to be an awakening. You don't need to chain people up by a hook on the ceiling in order to...
Right. Like, it's like a kid that only has seen porn and, like, thinks that that's how all sex goes. I also wanted to... because I watched this with Tessa the second time. And she was like, people should always listen to Terry. And I was like,
they should.
That's good
I
advice.
Agree. Terry knows it, too. I love that guy.
Me, too.
Terry is the creamy caramel center of this season of the show.
Yeah. I know him also, like, later I saw him in Gilmore Girls, and it's, like, his character, he plays Zach in that, and his character in this show is, like, so much more endearing and, like, just a real human, and it just makes me really happy to watch him.
All right. Anything else from either of you on first impressions?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's move on to the plot. Do we want to talk about Tara and Marianne?
Yeah.
And some very, very comfy looking sheets.
Yeah. Tara seems so happy at Marianne's. Like, if I woke up in that bedroom with, like, the white... And I'm not someone who, like, even has white sheets, I don't think. Like, I have, like, cream-colored ones, and those are my white ones. She just, like, it's so clean and the fine lines, and it seems like such a relaxing place to wake up in. Like, I would get the best night's sleep ever at Marianne's.
Well, and she's wearing these, like, gorgeous pajamas that look amazing on her, and you know she didn't set an alarm. Like, it's just, she's had, like, the best
she
night
just woke
of sleep
up.
She's had in forever.
Yeah. Tara's looking amazing in this episode, also.
She does.
Yeah, it turns out that Tara just needs to sleep and not to sleep in the same house as Letty Mae.
Yes.
In order to just suddenly feel like all of Sam. Yeah.
And also to like not have to worry about finances. I think that is the biggest thing is that she's being allowed to like just take a break and be taken care of. And a lot of that has to do with like not worrying about your bills. Like she's still going to her job and everything, which I think is good. Because her attitude at her job is a lot better than it was.
But she's never not had to worry.
Exactly.
She was, even as a child, was making cocktails for her mum and looking after her mum. So this is like the first day, possibly, the first morning. She hasn't had to look after someone else in quite some time.
It must be really...
Also... Go ahead.
I was just going to say it must be just like really relaxing. To feel that way or not have to feel that way.
She also just met an extremely hot man who plays
eggs. the way she looks at him is like, whew, he's hot. And I was trying to forever to figure out where I knew him from, and then it occurred to me that he played Jimmy Olsen in Supergirl.
Okay. Good for him.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, and he follows Lafayette and Jason Stackhouse in the and Eric, to some extent, in the "we do not wear sleeves in this house."
It's hot in Louisiana.
Sleeves are banned. Melissa and I would fit in well because we don't wear sleeves a lot. Like I wear very few sleeves in the summertime, summer. Especially.
I like though that Tara like talks to Egg about how this whole situation is a bit too good to be true. You know, she says, like, my mom would call this Satan in a Sunday hat.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. I was like, that's a really... I mean, I wouldn't say that because I'm Jewish, but, like, I was like, if I wasn't Jewish, that would be a great thing to say.
You'd say Satan in a Saturday hat?
In a Sunday hat. Oh, I get it. I get it now.
Bad joke.
Only the very religious people wear hats to synagogue. I'm joking. We don't talk about Satan is the real disconnect. I know you're joking, but I can't help myself. I really laughed hysterically when Tara says to Egg, "What is she collecting, stray black people?"
I know. I like that too. It's very funny. Also because it's weird.
Yeah. The whole situation is quite weird.
Like, I haven't seen, like, Get Out or anything, but part of me is like, this could go real poorly for them. Like, if it was, like, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, so she also has a sort of slightly creepy, silent butler stroke, chef stroke, houseman.
I don't think we got introduced to him, really. We just got shown him.
No, I don't know we got his name.
I think we get it eventually. I don't think that's a spoiler to say that.
And we know it's very much of the time because she doesn't have a smartphone and she also is comfortable leaving her phone behind in the bath, in the bedroom, not having it as a comfort blanket on her.
Today I went and like made my lunch without my cell phone with me and it felt very weird, so I understand that.
But fortunately everything's fine with Marianne and there's no other sketchy.
If you don't consider the fact that like she was that naked woman in the middle of the road because she also has a big ass Paul Bunyan pic.
But also, like, she was shaking
that she
and
sits
she's
and
clearly...
stares at and starts going...
Zzz. Yeah, she's, like, buzzing and she's clearly supernatural.
Yeah.
But also, I was like... What's she doing? Is it bad, though, that part of me was like, I wonder what it'd be like to have sex with Marianne while she was vibrating?
I don't think you're the first person to think that.
I mean, I would imagine...
I don't think that aspects of that won't come up next season.
I hope. I'm like saying I hope, like I don't remember what happens.
I have said that there's a particular gif, and it is from next season, but there's a particular gif of Marianne sort of lowering her arm during a party of the night, and it sort of like spreads her arm out like multiple times. And I've sent it to people and they've gone, "Who is she?"
I vaguely remember that actually. Please send me that gif. It's always funny to me to hear people say GIF for the first time because you never know if they're going to pronounce it correctly. Good job.
Anyway, Marianne, apart from vibing with a big ass pig and
vibing with a big ass pig,
I mean,
we say vibing all the time, possibly more than like a normal friend group. Yeah, this is like the most true it's ever been.
It really is. I think I say the word vibes like at least once or twice a day. Like, so it's much. Just...
It's a pillar of my pop culture critique.
It's also a pillar of like my lifestyle. Like, yes, what are the vibes?
To say lifestyle. Whew, okay, yeah. So I mean, like, she's. I think it's safe to say this is a little bit sketchy.
Oh, totally sketchy. Like, she's, yeah.
She's got Sam running for his life.
Yeah, he's
yelling
like,
at everybody. Get me all my money. Talk to me about Marianne.
Yeah. I think it's. I'm like. I don't. To be honest, I don't remember specifically what their history is, which I'm excited about because it'll be newish again. But like, it was bad enough where A, he didn't tell anyone that he knew her, and B, he just like was like going to his safe and grabbing all that money. So
okay,
it's not good.
We're gonna go on a Sam tangent.
Oh, please do.
A Sam tangent.
So there's Sam notes later in the episode. Hopefully we won't have to talk about him twice. But I just have to say, like, this man called Tara all day bitching about her not calling him back. About how, even if you don't call me back, that doesn't mean we broke up. Sir, you made out with Sookie, her best friend. So I don't know what you're doing. And then he's so rude to her about it. And then... he yells at her about Marianne, and then he's so scared about what this woman is capable of that he takes every dollar he had in that safe, which, like, get a bank account, whatever. All the dollars in the bag, he's leaving. You spent all day calling Tara and bitching at her about not calling you back, and you're not even going to warn her? She is essentially being adopted by this woman, and you're just going to let it happen and skip freaking town?
Yeah, that is something that really didn't sit well with me either. Yeah, it didn't.
It's possible.
I mean, it's not shocking that, like, Sam is a fake ass bitch, but
that yeah, Sam,
I'm not pleased with Sam, but the guy. Rest of what I have to say relates to Sookie, so I'll save it. But yeah, Sam was not. I had high hopes for Sam at one point in this episode, and then he tanked it. So,
yeah, I mean, like, again, I will say, like, I think some blame goes to Sookie for all the absolute nonsense that happened last episode. I don't want to absolve her of that, but Sam is a trash human being who treats Tara like garbage and doesn't, you know, and views other people as his property and is passive aggressive and bitchy and
hella bitchy.
You know, I kind of hope that Marianne eats him.
Maybe she'll feed him to her pig. She probably has better taste than him.
As long as she doesn't vibe him, then I'm fine. He doesn't deserve that.
I mean, at least from a pig you can get bacon, right? Or a really nice pork chop. Like, what can you get from a fluffy dog? It's not even that tasty.
I wonder if the reason he's running from town is because Marianne has previously vibed him.
Maybe. I just want to, I know we, like, said this, but, like, in addition to just being really happy, Tara is nicer and more honest than she's ever been. Like, I don't think a previous version of her would, like, have let Sam go, which she should very much be letting Sam go. And I also appreciate after, like, what happens with Sookie, like, when they first see each other again, she's like, listen, we don't have to talk about this now. Like, I felt that was very mature of her in a way that I don't know if earlier in the season she wouldn't have acted.
Oh, no,
that way.
She very much isn't that way earlier in the season. She gets, like, when Sookie's clearly not in the mood for a conversation and she starts going off about Bill. Yeah, no, I think it's a complicated one, right? Because it's kind of like the situation with Letty Mae, in that you are like, well, this was obviously fraudulent what happened to you, but you seem to have, it seems to have at least helped you kick your alcohol habit to reveal the cunt beneath in Letty Mae's case. But
but yeah, I also feel like
good little visual from
I mean, like, I Marianne knows what happened to Tara, which I think is important because she, like, is clearly at this point someone that she's not lying to. And she told, you know, Marianne told Eggs, and, like, they talked about it, and I appreciated that Eggs was like, we've all been through shit, basically. I don't remember his, like, exact words, but that was his tone. And it's funny, like, even though obviously Tara knows she got a fake exorcism, I feel like having a place to sleep and, like, she probably got more than $800 worth of fruit served to her at Marianne's house, so it worked out.
It's ten. It's a banana. How much could it cost, Elise? $10.
Me and Jessica Walter don't know how much things cost. But to be honest, like, I legitimately don't know how much a banana costs because A, I don't go grocery shopping, and B, I'm allergic to them.
Before we move on from Tara, I also want to say that, like, she has an extremely nice conversation with Andy Belfler, and I don't necessarily think he deserves it because we watched him all episode, but it's, like, nice for Tara to take a moment for someone who's very obviously struggling because
she's been there. Yeah, he was having a rough episode. He was an asshole and did not handle it well.
Do you think when Andy's vendetta against Jason is over, which hopefully is now, I wish that he could be more of just, like, a lovable idiot than, like, someone who was, like, actively malicious and bad?
I feel...
I have a vague recollection of what happens in season two, so I think we can be encouraged for some pratfalls and some goofiness.
If I remember correctly, like, I don't hate him in general.
I sort of remember that.
I don't remember.
I never know.
Yeah.
I never know how much of that is, like, me being an idiot when I was younger and, like, not understanding what to hate people for.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
right. I think
the show really
I think it's more like character. I think it's more how I feel about Odo in Deep Space Nine, where I'm like, he's very, like, ACAB at the beginning, and then still, I just end up loving him anyway, and I feel like they soften Andy Belfler, but I don't remember the specifics.
I'm more just thinking, like, if you've been sat at the bar and Merlot's being served by Tara and she suddenly starts acting nice to you, how little do you trust that she's not just setting you up?
No kidding. No kidding.
But anyway, he's quite drunk. Anyway, all right. Yeah, I agree. Fundamentally, she needed a good night's sleep, and unfortunately she's had the good night's sleep in a place that seems a little sketch, but we shall see more of that next season. So... Jason is, I think we start the episode with him in the police station.
He's like giving his shit away. Like, he's like an old person about to die. He's like, Renee, take my truck. Hoyt will get my lucky hoodie, which I'm like, what is so lucky about this hoodie? Like, did you get laid in it? Like, what? Cause I, that
he
to me is
got
like
it
something
when he won
that
football.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess he does like football too.
I don't think there's any article of clothing that Jason Stackhouse owns that he hasn't got laid in, so
that's probably true.
Like, the one night he goes out and doesn't take somebody home, he's like, this is my unlucky gray t-shirt.
He has like a little portion of his closet that's like the unlucky shirt.
I must burn it or cut the arms off.
He has to like refashion it if it's not lucky enough. He won't let Suki help him. I just think he's like not trying to hear her. Like, he's just like, this is, he's convinced himself that he has done these murders. It's really, really wild to me. And I'm like, my poor dumb baby, like, what are you doing?
I sort of feel like, I do think that it is very likely to be that he has convinced himself that he's doing it because he is not confident enough in his own mind to like truly believe that he would never do something to not remember it, you know? But I also kind of wonder if like he would like almost rather believe he's the killer and that like he's the one going to hell than entertain the hope of Suki actually be able to find the killer and like get him out, you know?
I think those are true, but I would also add, I think he is also genuinely going through a huge amount of trauma and grief about the fact that the one woman who actually means something to him, even if she was a trash person, is dead. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like, and he mentions later in the episode, like,
don't forget the grandmother. Like, it's, yeah. I don't think Amy's the only one.
That's the one that, no, well, he reacts, so he reacts badly to Andy, say, or to Renee, sorry, suggesting that
they were
all fang bangers.
Yes.
But, like, he was, that Amy was the one person in all of his fucking around that he found out and liked.
Yeah. And like, she took him seriously.
As awful a person as she is. And she took him seriously. And as awful as she was, like, the fact that she died next to him in bed, I think is a hugely traumatic thing. And he's like, he's like, he mentions later that she was the only she was the only person, I can't remember exactly the phrase, but it's something like that she didn't deserve him, or, and I'm like, well, actually, you didn't deserve her, but that is the only time that's been true, like, because she was so bad. But yeah, I think like that, I think his relationship with her was real to him and was very meaningful to him. And yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, she died in the bed with him. Like,
I do want to push back on one thing that you said. I don't think that she took him seriously. I think that he thinks that she did.
Oh, well,
but
sure.
I feel
that's
like
what I
from
meant.
The beginning,
like, from
she was like, she liked the seriously. Idea. She liked the idea of, like, I'm going to date this guy that, like, works for the state and has his own house and his own truck. I feel like she wanted a place to live for a little while. And, like,
I
don't know. I'm very cynical about
so,
her.
I mean, I don't think erring on cynicism with Amy is the goal. But I don't think she was as scheming. I think she was a very reactive person. I don't think she had any, like, strategy. It was all tactics. It's like, shit, I need blood. Oh, there's a guy who's a cook here who knows where you can get vampire blood. I'm going to follow him. Oh, shit. Maybe I've... And she has the chainmail, obviously. But I don't think she, like, planned anything out. Because I don't think she's as smart as she thinks she is.
Yeah, I don't think she was, like, manipulating him like consciously or anything. I think she just was is a user as a person and does what she needs to do to get what she wants.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
This is gonna sound so bad, but like all of this would have all been fine if she wouldn't have killed Eddie. Jason would have let her do that forever, and then his self-esteem would be so high.
I know. He met Eddie and he liked him.
I know. And he even tells the Fellowship of the Sun guy that.
I know. That's I really loved nice. His interaction with the Fellowship guy. He was basically like, oh, yeah. The way that this Fellowship guy thought that Jason was smarter than he actually is was so funny to me.
We can't condone what you did, but your heart was in the right place.
I just love that he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And Jason is like, that's the most honest Jason has ever been in his life, I think. Had- he thinks this guy thinks he's playing dumb, and Jason legit is like, I
was just gonna say, Jason's like, aren't you the church that hates vampires? And the other guy's like, no, we're a pro-human church. And Jason's like, oh, thank goodness, because actually I would have been like that, but I met a vampire and they're quite nice. Like,
I do like that Jason
that my girlfriend murdered.
I do like that Jason talked back to that guy a little bit and was like, oh good, because I thought you just hated vampires. Like, he was like, mm-mm.
Yeah, he was prepared to stand up for them.
I know.
Renee is just like lurking in some of these scenes in the jail cell, and it's like very like spooky and like eerie because, you know, we know that. But Jason and Renee,
we saw
are
the
like,
facts.
Yeah, and Jason and Renee are like mirrors of each other. You know, this is such an outdated reference, but like I don't know a new one yet. Which is like they're like Neville Longbottom and Harry Potter, which is like. Renee found out his sister was seeing a vampire, and he killed her. And Renee found out.
I thought you were
gonna
say like something about Jesus or something.
No. And she
like this is such an old reference.
No, yeah, it's just like I would like to try to stop referencing Harry Potter, but it was like the first story I ever understood. So like it's hard.
It is hard.
But yeah, like Jason and Renee, like no parents with their sisters. Sisters Day vampires. Renee loses it, turns into a serial killer. Jason turns into like a dummy who made friends with Eddie.
mirrors.
Oh my god.
I mean, I saying Jason turned into a dummy is giving him a little
bit. As a dummy.
Oh, real quick, I just want to plug something at this juncture. I also wanted to say the word juncture. The new edition of Movie Jean zine came today, and it's about doubles and mirrors.
Fun.
And so our friend Tessa wrote an article about John Woo, and I watched all those movies with her because John Woo has a lot of like characters that are doubles or opposites. And our friend Ryan, these are both people that have been on our podcast, wrote about Taylor Swift, and I cannot wait to read this. It came in the mail today. I'm so excited.
I think that was a great juncture to put that plug for our friends in.
I'm going to bow now.
Where are we?
Andy's a piece of shit is where we're at.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, Andy's in the bar bragging about saying, like, Jason, how Jason confessed and how he's... and basically, even Bud Dearborn is like, that isn't exactly how this happened. And he's disgusted and leaves. But there's some woman just, like, hanging on Andy's arm, and it's
It's, like, insane to me. My notes about this section are in all caps because Andy still wants Jason to go down for these murders. Even though there's a new suspect, he continues to want it through the entire episode, even when there is a dead killer and evidence. Like, it's crazy.
I think Andy is jealous of him because he gets the ladies.
Yeah, I think that's true. But equally, like, Andy literally discovered... I was about to say Andy has discovered nothing in this entire season. He has discovered that Sam lied, which just goes to show how rubbish Sam is because he can't even trick Andy Belfort. But like, for all the evidence he had, for all the time he's been pursuing Jason, or the whole case, he's not had a single bit of evidence. The only thing that happened is that Jason walked into the police station and confessed. Because he didn't know what had happened, right? Like, Andy is very, very bad, other than at finding out that Sam is not
and,
a
like,
matrix.
I don't even think what Jason did would count as confessing if, like, any of this worked properly, because he didn't say, like, I killed her, here's how I did it. He said, well, she's dead, so I must have killed her. We were high on
that. Yeah, like, that's not... I don't think that's a real confession either. It's very vague, and it's, like... It's clear that he's, like, guessing about what happened.
Plus, he's white, and it's the South, so surely he wouldn't go to prison for this.
Well, Renee doesn't either. He gets chopped.
Speaking of Renee, I love how superficial Jason is when he's like, I can't believe I gave him my truck, after he finds out, like, Renee actually is the murderer. And I'm like, that is, like, not even the... That shouldn't be on the list of stuff. Like, you're gonna get that truck back. Like, calm down.
Well, yeah, and, like, obviously Renee's, like, lying, but there's some truth to it when Renee's talking to Sookie later in the episode, and he's like, Jason was always good to me. I'm sure that there is some part of Renee that does feel remorse for, like, somebody who was good to him, who he believes has, like, the same sort of anti-vampire, like, feelings as him. Like, I'm sure he is bummed that this is the person who's going to go down for him. Not enough to step in and confess. But, I mean, I do think that he's being truthful when he tells Sookie that, like, him and Jason were real friends. So that makes it even funnier that Jason is like, I can't believe I gave him my truck.
I'm sure that when on work crew, like, they were making very off-color comments about vampires.
100%.
Yeah.
And Hoyt was just sort of sad boy trying to say. But I just think they're just people, right? Everyone's just people.
We're just innocent men.
Just innocent vampires. Just normal vampires. Sorry, we're referencing a meme that apparently Melissa doesn't know.
Oh, I'll send it to you later. It's so stupid. I love it. I'm obsessed. We say it constantly back and forth. It is funny how Jason was like, oh, I don't think we said this, but, like, the fact that the church, like, had defense collection for him, like, is so funny and felt very, very real life to me. Like,
icky.
That would happen.
Icky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys buy, like, him at the church, because when he's in prison, he's like, you know, he's very clearly like, well, actually, I spoke with Eddie and he seems like a reasonable person. And then he's reading the material and he's like, actually, this is boring. Can I have a magazine? Like, I don't quite see the transition. And like, the killer was a guy who hated vampires, who killed his grandmother. Like, I don't quite see how he goes from that in 2 weeks to cheering. Yeah. When Reverend Steve Newland says we're gonna kill all the vampires.
I will agree that that is a lot to handle. However, because of who Jason is, and because of like how broken he was, and he was so close to finding like something real, he thought with Amy and now she's gone. Like when he's telling Sookie he found his purpose, I just don't know what it is yet. I mean, he goes into that church one time and they make him feel good. And it's like mega churches exist in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, it's like, it's funny how Jason's acting in the church. And it's also like, oh, this is a horror movie. Like, this is how quickly it happens to people.
Yeah. It felt very much. I agree with both of you. Like, I don't think that he went there in the most for the most pure reasons. I think he needed to get away from town. I think he grew up in a world where going to church is the thing that makes you a better person. So he thought, I might as well give that a shot. But I agree with Melissa that, like, those places can be, I mean,
that not anti-vampire church guy told me I was special. I should go there.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with Melissa that, like, he probably also just gets, like, I mean, you didn't phrase it this way, but, like, he probably just gets wrapped up in the moment of, like, everyone cheering on and just starts to believe stuff. I am not a religious person. I did not grow up in any form of Christianity, so, like, I can't relate to it, but I feel like it's a thing I've seen where people can easily get wrapped up in this nonsense, I'm just gonna call it.
Yes, let's call it he's a moth going to the Fellowship of the Sun.
I will say that.
Yeah, that works.
All right, anything more we want to say about Jason?
Yes, I don't know if I wrote it in the notes or if I meant to talk about it later, but there's nothing funnier to me than when Jason trips over the coffee table at Sookie's house after he's like, I love you, sis. I'm going to do better. And then, like, she's like, okay, just be careful. And then he fucking trips over the table. And I said to Lazi, I was like, this is hysterical. And he goes, that's you. Because last time we hung out, which was last weekend, I tripped on cobblestone steps, like, 4 times. And it was very funny. I was like, as long as my falling is charming, I don't care. I did not injure myself.
I think
it
was. We're going into extra special details for this finale pod, but the particular circumstances that were set up was that we were taking the train to Bath in the southwest of England, and the train instructor was giving these announcements saying, train instructor, the train announcer was giving
train
these announcements saying,
does he teach you about train?
Saying it's rained quite a lot, so it's quite slippy out. And Elise was hubristically mocking these announcements. So it wasn't just the I'm tripping over, I'm slipping up. It was the, it's just been a bit wet. So surely.
This was a week ago today, actually. So it was just very funny. I forgot about that part of the story, so thank you.
Convenient.
You're welcome.
Love forgetting about things.
Right. Sukka and Renee and Sam and Bill.
That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. Sookie goes to visit Jason right at the beginning to tell him about Drew Marshall, which, again, I do not think the actor who plays Renee looks like Drew Marshall, but
I don't like, it doesn't look like it should be his name, and it also doesn't look like that fax, but anyway,
I mean he looks more like that fax than anyone else, so you knew it was Renee.
Yeah. Renee is very bold, continuing to think thoughts around Sookie, but I guess he doesn't know in this scene. But I love the way she, like, snaps at him, because he's like, why won't you just tell the police there's another suspect? And she's like, look around you. These police ain't shit.
I don't think he didn't say that out loud, did he? He said it in his mind.
No, he didn't. He said it in his head, and she responded.
Yeah, he was like,
true.
Yes. Yeah, he was something, he had thought something like, why didn't you tell anybody or whatever.
Yeah, so it's even, my point stands even more. It's even funnier that she yelled at him.
Because yes, it was, because it, like, it, exactly.
Yeah.
So when she's leaving the jail, I never know, like, how to differentiate the words prison and jail, but I feel like when you're, like, at the police station, it's just
it's
jail.
A jail.
A
prison is, like, a long-term
facility. Yeah, they're both bad. So Renee cuts, or Drew, whatever we want. I'm going to keep calling him Renee. Cuts the lines on her car, and then she can't start her car, and then offers her a ride home in, like, a creepy, like, this whole bit between Renee and Sookie felt very horror movie, and, like, the kind of horror movie I would enjoy.
Yeah.
Not, like, when I'd be oh, no, this is too scary.
I love when Sookie, her car doesn't start, so she yells, "Darn it, son of a mother fudge." And I'm like, girl, if there was any a time for the whole entire, you know,
word
language of curse words, like, it would be now, but that's just Sookie shit. But then the camera, like,
isn't there one episode which finishes, is it when, like, Long Shadow explodes on her or something like that, where she says, like, mother fuck, and it cuts in the middle of it or something like that? So do we think she says mother fudge?
Probably.
My mom said fudge instead of fuck in front of us for the majority of our childhood, but, like, we weren't stupid. Like, we knew what she meant. And my dad, like, never cursed in front of us until I was, like, maybe 15. So, like, the first time I was, like, in shock. But, yeah, my mom said fudge all the time. So every time I watch this scene, I think of my mom.
Oh, all cute. Now that The Good Place exists, if I don't want to say fuck, I always say fork.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Fork.
I still haven't finished
the that.
That's
so funny.
My 5-year-old explained to me the other day that frick actually isn't a bad word.
Oh, well, that checks out.
Did he have, like, what was his backup? Like, what were his reasons?
My younger son does not need reasons for anything. His view of the world is what matters, and he doesn't understand explanations or disagreements with anything that anyone else says. So, yeah.
We're friends. He showed me his stickers, so.
He did show you his stickers.
It was great.
True.
He was so proud.
It's very true. I agree. That line was amazing. And just top class delivery.
Yeah, and then Renee just pops out in her car window. It's a jump scare. Like, so, like, I was laughing when Elise said this is a horror movie. I'm like, yeah, it's a literal jump scare.
Renee
does, like, 4 jump scares in this.
He
in
really
this,
does. Like, he, I mean, it's later, but, like, I specifically remember the one where Sookie's, like, hiding in the like, freshly dug grave or whatever, and, like, you just see his shoes. Like, that was, I had forgotten about that. I watched this episode twice.
There's another one in the kitchen as well. Like,
I watched this episode twice this week, and this, like, scared me twice. One thing I literally hate, but, like, I hate it, but also I like it, is when, like, the villain is being really nice to the person that they're gonna eventually try to kill. I'm like, I fucking hate you and your manipulative shit, but, like, it works. It makes
it
way
feels like
it makes it creepier.
It definitely is, like, upping the ante for shouting at the screen, like, don't go with him, he's a fucking asshole. But yeah, like, it works well. Yeah, so they cut away to Sam back at Merlot's, and, like, Renee had left his, like, high-vis jacket, I think, and Sam, like, it picks it up and starts sniffing it like the fucking little freak he is, and
rolling around in the sheets just has paid off.
Just
the writing.
I just want to say,
tight.
No kink shaming, just Sam shaming. So he smells the vest and realizes that Renee is
in general
the killer.
Yeah,
not I don't think Sam's sense of smell is that good. If he couldn't have smelt Renee at one of the many other times that Renee has been actually present.
I do sort of think that there's some element of, like, why would he be sniffing the boys that come through the bar? But I agree that, like, you must have whiffed this scent.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, so Sam, yeah, maybe he has, like, a 2 millimeter smell radius. Or maybe it's, like, Sookie does say, like, she's constantly trying to tune out, like everyone's thoughts. Maybe Sam is trying to tune out everyone's smells. I do not feel like a bar is the best place. Like that bar particularly is the best place
to work.
It
probably smells like horrible in there.
Smells like shit, right? So he's realizing, and then just at the same time, we're getting a lot of flashbacks from Renee whilst from sort of Sookie's perspective. And so she realizes that she sees inside his head and sees him murdering her gran, because her gran wasn't supposed to be there. He was there to kill her, basically.
That was so rough to watch. Sookie watching Renee's thoughts of him killing her gran. Like, that was just... Oof. I was just going to say, sometimes I forget how violent the show could be. And maybe, like, a little bit more violent than things I watch currently, except, like... House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. But yeah, just.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and then in the next sort of set of sequences, so Sookie sort of tries to escape, tries to go get her shotgun. Renee's taking the shells out of the shotgun so it doesn't work.
Killers
and he's
always
sort of
be
smug
doing that.
And he's very, he does start monologuing a little bit, and so she takes the opportunity to scream at him and then smack in the face with the butt of the shotgun, which is good. But then we get, like, her on the run and then a lot of visual imagery of him sort of flashing back to the other women he's killed.
His sister, specifically. Including his, I don't know.
Well, it's his sister, but I think we got some of the other girls
Modette,
as well.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it is... It's one of these things where... I'm just very tired of seeing that on TV. I don't have any, like, there's no, and obviously this predated Game of Thrones, but, like, I just have no energy to watch that, really.
Yeah.
Fortunately, mostly flashes, but yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, in the more recent seasons of Outlander, I actually didn't watch the last season, but the season before, there's a rape scene where you hear it, but you don't see it, and it's still very, very traumatic to listen to, but I very much appreciated the choice to not also show it. I think that show has a hard time because the book fans are so... There's not a nice thing I could say. They're so, like, stringent on what they want to see in their television show, and they can be a little scary. I don't know how that got received, but I thought it was a better choice. So it's just... It is hard to go back and see shows, like... Maybe a little bit before we were more conscious of cutting back on violence, like sexual violence and that kind of thing.
I'm not going to go into detail about this, but in the book, there is like a random detail about sexual violence that Renee committed against his own sister. And it is it's so extreme and so jarring compared to the rest of the book that it's like, Charlaine, why? For what reason did you put this in here? He already murdered like 4 women. He's bad. We get it. Like, So to be honest,
I'll tell you later.
I had that in mind when I was watching this episode, and it's like almost a relief, even though it's just like one line in the book.
Yeah. I had finished my reread of the book like a few weeks ago, so I kind of had forgotten about that until you had written that in the notes, and I was like, oh yeah, that was.
But yeah,
not good.
I mean, this is really violent and quite difficult to watch, especially because we've seen the other women who were killed. Like, we've seen them in sex tapes and their dead like faces on the TV so many times. It's like all I'm getting at is I agree it's difficult to watch. And I honestly had a hard time, despite wanting it to happen, I had a hard time watching Sookie shove a shovel into this man. Like, it's brutal. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I was like, this first season should be called Justified. I was like, this is a justified kill.
100%. definitely. It definitely is. But, yeah. And
so you're saying you didn't dig it?
I
what'd you say? I don't know. I miss her. I didn't hear you.
He said, are you saying you didn't dig it?
That was terrible. You're fired.
Speaking of fired.
Well, oh, yeah.
I didn't do that on purpose, but I will pretend that I did.
Incredible transition.
I just, Bill wakes up from Sookie's fear because he's back on it, and he leaves his home in the middle of the day to go help her, and I have questions about, like, what do you think you're going to do? You're frying to a crisp. Like, now everybody's dead.
Yeah, he's, I just don't understand why he didn't put you know, I've seen Spike
like
run
a poncho
between cars
or something.
And stuff. Like a poncho. Like, why don't they? Why do not? Yeah.
He needs a Vampire Diaries bracelet.
Or like really intense sunblock or something.
I was just listening to you guys talk about foundation, and I didn't finish it, but Melissa's like, is so and so actually a vampire? And Lazzy was like, well, he was out during the day. And you were like, well, I've been watching a lot of Vampire Diaries. They get these like special bracelets where they could be outside during the day. It's bananas.
Tayshia talked about Vampire Diaries on their most recent episode of Act Age, so I had to DM her and be like, oh my
funny.
God, I'm watching it too. Anyway,
I've watched most of Vampire Diaries. I feel like I need to get with you to so that when you get to the part where I stop, that I pick
for
it
sure.
Up.
We'll do that.
But I like the plug. Please listen to Melissa and I be somewhat chaotic on the Asimov cast about Foundation, including the question, was Paddington a vampire?
Okay. So Sam is very helpful with Bill. He's like, let's cover him up, let's bury him, blah, 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 blah. But then he thinks he's friend-zoned and becomes a fucking asshole. And this is what we were kind of alluding to earlier, where I'm just like, Sam, you can't have it both ways. Either you're a decent guy that's going to help your friend, help her boyfriend, or you're going to be, like, this guy who's, like, a dick.
His care is conditional. Like, when he thinks that he's going to help Sookie deal with Bill's painful
score points
son Chris
with her.
Death, he's willing to do that because once Bill is dead, Sookie can be healed by him. Like,
yes. Ugh, that's so gross.
I know, it's horrible.
Sam doesn't care about anyone apart from himself. He cares about what he gets from other people, all of his interactions with people that are, even when they're seemingly positive, are all transactional because then you owe him something or then he seems like a nice guy. Like, he is an entirely selfish character. He is marginally better than Letty May, but marginally.
I re-listened to us on episode, I think it was 110, and Laz is like, in other words, fuck Letty May.
Damn.
It's so...
I'm very behind on this podcast.
It is so funny. I loved it. Anyway, yeah, so Sookie's on drugs because she's very injured and people are coming by to visit her. Arlene comes by and is just a mess. She brought flowers. She's crying. Like, Sookie's dealing with it. Sookie's on drugs. And Arlene is like, Sookie, I know she's a little worried that, like, the reason that they didn't discover Renee ahead of time is because Arlene had asked Sookie not to listen in on her. And Sookie's like, don't worry, it doesn't work like that. But Arlene's like, it needs to work like that next time I have a boyfriend because my taste in men is dog shit. And if I were Arlene, I'd be right there with her. Like, I need my boyfriends vetted too. This one was a straight up murderer.
I had a lot of feelings that Sookie should have been in the hospital longer for all the beating that she took, that we watched her take. And I found Arlene to be, like, I felt bad for Arlene, like, don't get me wrong, but, like, Arlene putting all of this on Sookie felt, like, so much to me. And I do think that Sookie in the book has, like, a more normal reaction. Like, they just made Sookie, like, stoned or whatever in the show, but in the book, if I remember correctly, like, Sookie's like, please get her, like, she's not like mad at her, but she's like, please get her away from me, like, I can't deal with this right now.
She's in the hospital and, like, her throat is very injured, and so she can't talk.
Yeah.
And so at that point, yeah, Arlene just like, comes I can't in, right cries, now. And then somebody takes her away because Sookie can't talk to her anyway.
Yeah, it was just a lot, and I felt like they went a little bit more comedy, mm-hmm. I guess, with the Sookie on drugs.
And, like, it was needed.
But, yeah, if...
And even Bill's out here doing a comedy act. Because
Bill
was doing a comedy. And he comes back, and Sookie's, like, all stoned, and she's like, you're alive. And Bill's like, well, technically, no. And it's like, come on, man. You're so serious. Like, this is a joke at this point.
Oh, my God.
She's very, very happy to see Bill.
Yeah, she is. I just felt very strongly that Sookie, like, was... The way that he was beating her up, like, did not align to me with, like, how she was acting afterwards. Yeah. Like, I get she was on drugs, but, like, that girl would not be able to move around. Like, she... Her eyes... Her face would be, like, what's-her-face from Grey's Anatomy, like... From the boat Ava. Crash, like, Rebecca, like, it would just be real inflamed.
Sorry, Liz, in the book during this part, Sookie is like, Renee didn't know I was so strong, so that's why she's so healed. But also, I mean, she doesn't take Bill's blood again, so she doesn't heal too fast, which that happens in the book too, but it's like, if I heal fast, the hospital's gonna be like, what the fuck? But maybe she's not as hurt. Because she had drank Bill's blood. Like, she's still a little super.
That's sucky. Entirely possible. I did not think that, but that would make sense. I did want to point out that in the book, one of the other reasons, there's, like, more to the reason why she didn't take his blood, and it was not, like, because I want to feel human now. It was more, in the book, the more blood that you drink, the more you change as, like, a human. Even if you're not turning into a vampire, and, like, I think she felt like people were starting to notice. Yeah,
she said
and she didn't want that to continue.
I'm starting to notice that I'm different, and I need to.
Yeah, like, I'm becoming a different person, and I don't want to be. So it was a little bit more interesting. I thought in the book that part was a little more interesting to me.
Yeah, for her to say, "I just need to feel human," it's like, this sucks. No, you don't. Nobody believes that.
Yeah, I would be. No, I know one, Tessa yeah. and I were like, we would be drinking that blood in 2 seconds if we were injured.
I would
that
already
much.
Be a vampire. Bye.
Look, I am going to say there are an awful lot of people who believe that giving birth without painkillers is the right way forward.
That is very true. I do think that is.
And I'm not saying it is or it isn't.
Yeah, but you're right. I do think that that is something women are like. Or people that have children are, like, told by hippies, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think there's a lot of people who for some reason, view pain and discomfort as worth. Like,
part
if
of
you've
the
gone
job.
Through it and you're like, it's, I earned this and therefore I need to recover through it or whatever. So, I don't know. But she invites him back in. She's very happy that he's not dead because I think she thinks he's dead. And then they make out to quite the string quartet.
Yeah, and then we do a time jump 2 weeks later. Human vampire marriage is
Let's
legal.
Let's do the time jump again.
Sam,
sorry,
is a dick about it. He is like, I'll throw you a party just like I threw Arlene. It's like, sir, too far. It's too far.
Like, it's so... unbelievably uncontrollably petty. It's amazing. Like, how are you like this, like, honestly? And how do you not get punched in the face more? Like, literally what happens is there's a news on the TV, there's a news piece which is like, vampire marriage is legal in Vermont, which I think again is supposed to be analogous to, I believe, gay marriage was like first legalized in Vermont, is that right?
Don't remember.
And then Arlene is like, maybe you and Bill. And then Sam is just immediately an absolute prick about it.
Which is funny to me. That whole bit was really funny to me because, like, Arlene had been so skittish about vampires previous to everything. And then, like, 2 weeks later, she's like, you and Bill should get married. And I was like, all right, that was a 180. if I ever saw one.
Well, there is that early scene, like, with Suki, where she's like, well, humans kill people too. And I think that's kind of the message of the season, right?
Right, yes. I mean, I think that is definitely the message of the season. Humans do a lot of killing.
Especially
in America.
And Tara's there too. And then Tara basically says, you know, she deserves happiness and wanders off to get into a car. And then we see the wonderful Michelle Forbes come up and meet Sam. And Sam immediately recognizes her. This is earlier, isn't it? This is before the two-week jump. But, Sam decides at that point he's going to chuck all his money in a bag and run away.
Yeah, that was when Suki was first home from the hospital. But
yeah.
Same difference.
So then we cut. Then we cut to Bill playing a honky-tonk piano in his house. And suddenly, Jessica's in. And what does she say?
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, Daddy.
Yeah, you did it a lot better. I did it in, like, a sexual way, and you did it in, like, a Jessica way.
Yeah.
I loved Eric saying, there are favors, and there are favors.
Favors.
That was maybe my favorite line of the entire episode.
Yeah, I love it. It's really great. And, like, Pam is there being amazing.
Yeah, she's, like, in this, like, amazing suit. Like, Pam is just, like, I love you.
I and think
like
this was it you and Tasia who pointed out, Melissa, like, when Pam is not at Fantasia, she's always all wearing, like, two pieces.
Yeah, she dresses
and,
like a fucking PTA mom.
And, like, yeah, it's incredible.
I love it.
So Jessica is back.
Bill is like, this is not the agreement. You have to keep Jessica. And Eric's like, I mean, I will if you'll give me Suki too. And thanks pop out. It's like, no, we're mad. And Pam is straight up just rolling her eyes at these boys.
They hiss almost like the What We Do in the Shadows vampires hiss at each other.
I've only seen the movie of that, but I'm sure that happened there. Don't remember. I do want to say that right before they cut to the piano bit, Hoyt is like talking to Suki and is like, does Bill have any vampire friends my age?
I know, I love it.
And then the next scene is like,
he is so freaking sweet. He is so sweet. He's like, Suki, congratulations. I'm so genuinely pleased that you can marry Bill if you want to, and I can marry a nice vampire girl if I should meet one, because all Hoyt wants in the world is just to meet a nice girl and just be nice. And I'm going to regret saying that someday. Maybe. But in any case, it's like,
I don't remember.
He's like, does Bill know anyone my age? In the very next scene, hi, Daddy.
Hi, Daddy.
So good. I loved it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then we get the aforementioned nice conversation that Tara has with Andy Belfer when she's like, I'm going to give you this one last drink. This is your only pity party you're getting from me. And then get your shit together, man. And they have called his sister to pick him up because he's not going to be driving in this state. The car is not where it is supposed to be. And when they find the car, there's a dead person.
We see a leg. We see painted toenails. We also missed a scene earlier where Lafayette had gone back to Merlot's. And suddenly we see a vampire-like style accelerator creeping up on him. He jumps up on the bin and then he disappears. And we haven't seen him for a while.
And so that was before the two-week jump. Mm-hmm. So yep. I feel
Sam's
like we're meant to think that is
after the two-week time.
Yes,
that Lafayette isn't back to work. And Terry's basically like, that's just how he is. And then they're definitely intending for us to assume that the person dead in the car is Lafayette because it's a black person, their nails are painted, and that's all the details we get.
Yes. Do we want to rank that cliffhanger?
Rank that cliffhanger.
I spoke to Tasia, who sadly couldn't be with us today, about where this cliffhanger should go in the rankings, and I tend to agree with her thoughts, but I don't know if you guys thought it was too high, or what do you think?
Do you want to tell us?
Oh, sorry. She thought it should be second, like right after Gran is dead.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
I
didn't realize you didn't see the chat.
I did read the chat, but
I agree with that. But I feel like Lazzy's going to disagree based on his face.
I would push it one down. I think that what we've got at number two... So number one at the moment is Gran is dead. Number two is the rat trays beating the shit out of Sookie at the end of the pilot. I would put this below that because I think it's more like when Dawn is dead. I think that finale of the pilot where Sookie, our main character, is getting the shit beaten out of them is that's the one that to me stands out. So I would put it at three rather than two, but I'm happy to be outvoted.
I mean, I think that you're right. I mean, Gran is dead is like the one because it's Gran. People don't kill grandmas in TV shows. And then I agree that by the time we're in the finale, we understand that characters in the show die. But we didn't know that until Gran was dead. And they were teasing us with it when Sookie gets the shipping out of her. So I'm fine with it at 3-2. That's still very high.
I'm fine either way.
Okay, we're going to toss a dice, I think. I think we've got two at two and two at three. So we will toss a dice and come back and it'll either be our number two or our number three.
Yes, and once we decide, I will post the rankings.
Yeah, I think we can post a ranking for the first season. Yeah. After this. Yeah.
I think we should. Okay.
All right. Well, that's most of the episode. We did have a brief character intro to the Reverend Steve Newlin, but we don't really get to know anything about him yet. So I think we can probably leave him for next season and his lovely wife, Anna Camp. So we go into what's the most chaotic. Who wants to go first? Melissa.
Oh, mine is Andy continuing to want to put Jason away for the murders despite evidence of another killer.
I think that's a good one.
Because that is pure chaos.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
not for the same reason, but Andy was also mine because I thought that him talking shit in front of about Jason at the bar in front of Sookie was chaotic as fuck, especially... He knows, I mean, obviously he's saying all of this out loud, which is funny because Sookie would know it regardless. And it's just like, you're just asking for trouble here.
What a dick. Especially because he's so wrong.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with Marianne vibing with Pumbaa. I know he's apparently a Paul Bunyan pig, but I don't have that reference. So I'm going to say he's Pumbaa. He's a big. You can be a big pig too. All right. What's most horny?
Oh, we gotta say Tasia.
Before we get to that, I did tell. Yeah, we have. I told Tasia we would say hers.
Cool. Yes.
Tasia's most chaotic was literally just like Marianne. That's it. Everything about her, and I was like, can't argue, honestly.
Do you want to transition into Tasia's most horny then as well?
Oh yes. So Tasia's most horny was Tara in a bikini, full stop.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
I mean, like, everything about it. Tara, the bikini, because it's gorgeous, and the pool, because it's also gorgeous, and I love pools.
The slightly giddy jumping into the pool, I think, particularly.
Yeah, she was just... That was another part where I'm like, she's just so happy.
Mine is me, myself. Go. This is more of like a thirst.
You're the most horny.
Than like a real right. Horned worked up for this. But I'm just so thirsty for Hoyt to someday meet Jessica. Because I know a vampire his age. And he's not going to be able to handle her.
Yep.
And I love that.
Yep. Yep. I'm going to go for Eggs because he's just randomly sitting around, shirt, you know, with no sleeves, playing a guitar.
Being understanding. Good fingering. I mean, he's going too far.
Did you just say fingering?
I said he has good fingering. It's like a Spanish guitar style. It's not strumming chords.
I thought you said he's fingering, and I was like, I don't remember that scene.
I did say that type, though. There was definitely no intention of innuendo on my part.
Never.
Never. And that leaves you, Elise.
Yes. Your hair is like a sunset after a bomb went off.
To be clear, I mean it looks pretty.
My most horny is Cherry, for Arlene.
Yeah,
Uh-oh. Also, I support it. But maybe Arlene needs a little bit of a man break first.
I think she needs solidity, and it is insane to think that Terry is that, but I think he kind of is in Bon Ton. Okay, do you guys want to talk about anything from the books? I know you sort of mentioned a few things as we go.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely a spoiler for the book and the show, because I'm going to say who the person in the car is. So if you don't want to know that, you should probably fast forward a little bit. In the books, Lafayette is the person that died and is in the car. But in the show, it's Miss Jeanette. Spoilers.
Lafayette. Too yep. good to kill.
Yeah. I'm so happy that yep. I keep him. Make that choice.
Pretty much. Pretty much. All right. Are we done? We might be done. Anything anyone else has got to say to wrap up this episode and this season?
I had so much fun doing this with you guys. I'm sad Tasia couldn't be here for our last episode of the season, yeah. but it was for good reason, so we forgive you. but yeah, no, it's just been a great time. I've been really enjoying revisiting this show.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm, you know, genuinely think this first season really holds up really strong. Season television absolutely ramps through the plot, but some good good character beats and some just fantastic sort of character studies. Like anytime you see Pam in a show, it's wonderful. Jessica is just a joy, a horrific joy to watch. Yeah, I've really enjoyed this too.
This is one of my like favorite shows of all time, and it's one of the first shows that I was watching like week to week. And Tasia and I had been joking about starting a True Blood podcast since before I ever started any podcast. So I just am so thrilled that we're finally doing this, and it's with you all who I love so much.
I'm glad I invited myself to be on yours and Tasia's podcast.
That's what you gotta do.
I also, like, this was a show I watched week to week as well when it first aired. I remember watching the pilot. It's important.
Okay. Well, the pilot started with a hand job and the finale finished with dead feet. So on that note, I think it's time for some plugs.
I truly had no fucking clue where you were going with that.
I'm like, wait, are they butt plugs?
If that's what you want to refer to, that's fine. I will start. You can find me on the Asimov cast and very recently on the Asimov cast with Melissa talking about Foundation. But it was a lot of fun, but also looking for joy and inspiration. And I am also on Blue Sky at Lozimanius. Melissa.
You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mel Yellow. I also do a podcast occasionally, sometimes still, called Wild Pretty Things. But if you would like to check out our complete backlog, that is still up on Patreon.
And Elise?
You can find me on Blue Sky and Storygraph and Letterboxd. On Blue Sky, I am Chicken Tendi, T-E-N-D-I. On the other two, I am Chicken _Tendi. You can find my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, A Deep Space Nine Rewatch, on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Pod Wraiths, PODWRAITHS, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wonderful. And thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme, which continues to fuck and is probably in my top three best things that's happened in this season of True Blood, because damn. You can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod with a Z, and email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. We will take a short season break, and we'll be back soon for season two. I'm Lossie, and my blood type is a silly, silly dog.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is meeting a nice vampire girl my age.
And I'm Elise, and my blood type is Jason tripping over the table immediately after giving a big speech.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.